Welcome to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio 930 WFMD. Brought to us by Putman Plumbing and Heating. How can we make you smile? I'm your host and moderator, Troy Skinner. By the way, make sure you check us out on the web. Go to WFMD.com. You can find the Faith Debate page by hitting on the On Air tab. There's a little drop-down menu. Among the shows that drop down is a click-through to the Faith Debate page. On that page, you'll find a daily blog. Well, it's daily during the week anyway. I take the weekends off. There's a link to Jonathan's blog, which isn't quite daily, but is usually a little bit more in-depth and more involved with some bigger international-type things and that sort of thing. He's a little more into the news stuff. I'm a little bit more into just trying to keep it interactive, and people who send me emails or things that catch my interest, I'll just throw them up on my blog kind of quick and interestingly. So you can email me. There's a little additional plug. Email me rather easily at troy@wfmd.com. Troy is T-R-O-Y at wfmd.com. On the panel this week, Jonathan Schweitzer, senior pastor of Crossroads Valley Chapel, and Rich Franzen, founder of Impact Africa. And he's in the States just for a short period of time because he's got to do what missionaries have to do all too often, and that is go on the sales circuit and raise some funding. Well, maybe we'll talk about that a little bit because that's a source of aggravation for me on your behalf. I commiserate with you on that. But first of all, I got to say, the most fascinating part of this show is going to be these first few moments. Rich apparently knows Jonathan going back to like 1988.
I see how you
unfortunately
do it.
He's known Jonathan for like 20 years, which is, you know, 14 more years than I've known Jonathan. So tell me about him.
There's lots of history. You know, lots of blackmail material and things maybe not too privy for the radio audience at the moment. But
the fact of the matter is that Rich is the one that I went skydiving with, that I went bungee jumping with. The whole crowd that I was hanging with at the time, the Teen Mania crowd, was kind of a go for it, you know, going on these mission trips to all these different countries and, you know, real cutting edge, you know, kind of do whatever it takes, you know, and nothing's too difficult, you know, nothing's too hard. And that was kind of the thrust of things
life
back then.
Extreme is the way to live it, or not at all.
So, and you end up going to school together and stuff, and so, and you've stayed in touch throughout the years, even though for the last 20 years or so, right?
Correct.
Rich and his wife, was she your wife 20 years ago?
Not quite.
Okay. Well, for simplicity's sake, Rich and his wife for the last 20 years have been going back and forth between the States and South Africa. But for the last, was it 4 years?
Correct.
You have been living full time with these brief excursions to the States to raise money in South Africa. So the first question, you know, I ask somebody who ends up going overseas to do missions is, why go overseas to do missions? There are people in America who need to hear the gospel. It'd be a lot easier and cheaper to do it here. What is the calling that, you know, could you describe your calling that has you feeling, you know what, I need to be away from America, and in fact, I need to be in South Africa?
Like, sure.
How does that happen?
Well, I believe everyone has their role and their niche and part to play in world missions. You know, many are called for here in America. But my heart and passion and my wife's heart and passion, specifically, we fell in love with the continent of Africa during a short-term mission trip. And we felt that, hey, America has plenty of opportunity. There's 24 hours, 24/7 TV stations, radio stations, churches on every corner. The culture here is saturated with the potential of a passionate Christian message. And so we wanted to spend our life and our energy and our passions in communities that may not have that, you know, availability to churches, to the message, to the discipleship, and even to the heart of God that we take for granted here in America. Many places around the world never even heard the name of Jesus. Now, they estimate that over 2.3 billion people still have never even heard the gospel for the first time. And yet, many times we get oversaturated here in America. And so Africa was a place where we felt we would spend a good long season of our life and help reach the folks of Africa and train them up to continue to minister and share amongst their own selves throughout the continent.
Now, nearly 4 out of 5 Americans would identify themselves as Christian. What percentage would you say of people in South Africa would identify themselves as Christian?
That's a good question, and part of it, you know, goes back to defining the word Christian. You know, even here in America, 4 out of 5, you know, say that in title. But if you break it down to really define a lifestyle of Christianity, you know, actively going to church, a moral lifestyle, and following biblical principles, those percentages are extremely different. However, in South Africa, it's very similar. You know, they say, you know, percentage-wise, you know, about 60% of the population is termed Christian. But, you know, and Christianity in South Africa is very unique, where it's, you know, many say it's a mile wide, but only an inch deep.
Just like America.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hello. Same thing here as there, you know.
Now, where you're doing your ministry, is it set up as, like, you have a local church that you pastor? Is that how it works? Or you travel to different churches throughout South Africa? Or what's the practical application of your ministry there?
Sure. We're based in Johannesburg, South Africa, which has been a very strategic location for us as far as travel and, you know, with a lot of the ministry that we do and airports and stuff. But, you know, we're a registered nonprofit organization there in Johannesburg. And we work with all kinds of different churches throughout the country, also into Zimbabwe, Zambia, Namibia, Madagascar, Ethiopia. I just got back from Botswana, and many different trips throughout the continent. So,
and are those plane trips?
Mostly, yes.
And they're not driving trips, right?
Some are driving. Some of the neighboring countries are drive trips generally.
And now, you mentioned to me before the show that you're in the United States for like 3 or 4 weeks to raise money to support the ministry, and you've been traveling all over the country. You're in Texas, you're in Maryland now. So you must have like just gobs of frequent flyer miles.
We're getting there. Yeah, I feel like a politician here in campaign season, kind of going from state to state and sharing the vision, raising funds, and trying to rally support.
Now, when you're out doing your traveling, you're going out on itinerant preaching opportunities. Is that what you're doing? You're jumping on a plane, heading to some other part of Africa, and then preaching on a Sunday? Or what is it you're doing when you do that?
Yeah, at Impact Africa, we have a few different main emphases that we do. One of them is, you know, the gospel has been in Africa, but there's still a huge, wide open door for evangelism. Left and right, we're seeing thousands and thousands give their life to the Lord through open-air gospel crusades. We have our own kind of lights and sound and portable stage and generators. And we go out into the most rural areas, the most densely populated, squatter camps is what they refer them to, and bring the gospel to remote locations that don't have regular access to it. And we'll share the gospel there in creative ways. Sometimes we're using lots of different visual aids and skits or movies and soccer festivals, all kinds of different ways to relate the gospel in a relative manner. And we're seeing thousands give their life to the Lord still, and healings and left and right. And so evangelism is a big thrust of what we do. You know, in Africa, you know, many people say the harvest is ripe, but we really feel that it's not ripe, it is actually rotting away. We can't get to these locations fast enough. People in many of these situations are desperate and dying and waiting and looking for hope. But because of the reputation or the risk factor, no one wants to go in there and share the gospel. And so that's where we come in to help bring the gospel into some of those areas that aren't as comfortable to go to.
And when you go in, I'm presuming that almost everybody you're speaking to would be of African lineage, so they would be black. I can't call them African Americans. They're African. They're black. They're dark skinned people. Correct?
They're African Africans.
They're African Africans.
Yes.
So, given the history in South Africa, particularly with apartheid, you ever run into issues of who's this white guy coming to talk to us about hope? And
absolutely, yeah. There's still, even apartheid's been gone for the last 13 or so years, so it's still a relatively new democracy and healing that's still taking place in the country, and so trust and mistrust is the biggest issues to overcome there between cultures and denominations, all those kind of things. But the main thing that transcends cultural and history issues is getting down to talking to people and meeting their needs. You know, they know when Pastor Rich comes into the community, I'm not there to push a political agenda. We're there feeding them. We're there giving them blankets in the wintertime. We're there playing with their children. We're there when the fires and the shacks burned down to help them with, you know, new clothes or materials. And so that transcends the true compassion, transcends, you know, those cultural issues.
Now, when you show up with, you know, the food and the blankets and the big stage show preaching the gospel and all those sorts of things that will attract them for the one-time event, and then you've obviously got to fly out and go somewhere else, what is left behind? Are you involved in church planting and building discipleship so that there will be leaders there to help train these people up after?
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's another, you know, whole foundation of the ministry of what we do. We do come in with the Crusades, but we also are strategic in working with those local churches that are involved with these events on lots of follow-up and discipleship. We're planting some Bible schools in many of them. But we also, one of the other things we do is host groups from North America, many church groups, many mission organizations, and help organize a positive, passionate, effective, you know, mission trip experience for them. And for the next few years, we'll target these communities and we'll go back in there with these teams and do door-to-door evangelism, children's programs on the streets, you know, gifts of hospitality, and all kinds of different programs over a number of years to really saturate that community and to follow up with that discipleship that it's really happening. So we do a big event, make a big splash, but even over the next few years, we're saturating wave after wave of groups and teams. And through that, we're seeing translators from the local church that are working alongside of us and with us. We're modeling for them, you know, how to do door-to-door evangelism, how to pray for salvations, how to pray for the sick, how to cast out devils and demons, how to give gifts of hospitality. So the nationals are learning and growing, getting stronger. And immediately those translators are able to invite those locals right to their local church right there across the field. And so the churches are getting stronger and mature, and the churches are growing in size, as well as we can provide a powerful experience for North American groups that come to Africa and want to get their hands dirty and not just kick around and, you know, paint a building, but see people face to face, nose to nose, and listen to their stories and hear their heartache, but be able to share the good news with them.
Now, if I heard correctly, at least in some cases, there are some local churches that are helping you to facilitate and pull this off. Is that my understanding, that that's a sometimes occasion, or is it always there's some, at least fragment of a church somewhere that's asking you to come in and have a crusade and help them have this big experience? Or are you going there sometimes, like, unannounced and just pop up a stage and, hey, everybody, come and gather around. Let's listen about Jesus.
That's right. No, we're always working with a network of local churches.
Okay.
Sometimes it may be two or three. Sometimes it may be 10 or 12. It varies community by community and locations.
Is there a significant language barrier?
Absolutely. You know, South Africa has over 33 official languages, and even more than that throughout the rural areas. And so, yeah, it's a challenge. So English is very prominent. Thankfully, we get by with that, but we always have translators, and sometimes two translators.
Or 33 translators.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you picked up any of the 33 languages?
I know a few words and phrases here and there. But
where's the bathroom?
Exactly.
I'm hungry.
Exactly.
Things like that. You're listening to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio, 930 WFMD, speaking with Rich Franzen, founder of Impact Africa, and also on the panel, Jonathan Schweitzer, senior pastor of Crossroads Valley Chapel. We haven't engaged in a whole lot of the debate stuff yet. I'm not sure where that'll... So Jonathan's just kind of sitting by and listening to the interview portion. I do want to talk about the language barrier. What are some of the other big barriers that you... I think you alluded to it when you talked about demon possession and that sort of thing. Things that I've heard, and I haven't been to Africa, so I'm only going based on what I've heard, and a few people who have been there that tell me that one of the big struggles in sharing the gospel and preaching Christ in Africa, and I'm not sure if it's as true in the southern parts as it is in the central and western parts of the continent, is that they've been exposed to Christianity, but they have this really weird amalgam of Christianity and, I don't know if they would call it voodoo, but this tribal ritual.
Correct,
kind of,
yeah.
Stuff. And so that Christianity is very confused.
Absolutely.
Is that a significant part of what you're trying to do, is to clarify what Christianity is, or do you just kind of bicep that and just go straight to preaching the gospel?
No, absolutely. There's a lot of clarity that needs to be, you know, brought there, and that's why we're doing lots of the teaching and discipleship and follow-up. That's why I was saying that, you know, sometimes it's a mile wide but an inch deep. So it's very common in some of these communities have a born-again believing pastor, pastoring a small church, but also still maybe adding a second or third or fourth wife, still going maybe to the local witch doctor for some, blessings on his crops or healing or things like that. And it's not out of evil intent. It's mostly totally out of ignorance. And there's a huge mixture of, their African traditional religions with their Christianity. And so there a lot of education is needed. And some of the bigger occults throughout Africa capitalize on that African traditions and Bible and mixing it together. And some of those occultic religions are growing very rapidly because it's appealing, because you get the best of both worlds.
Now, how does that play out, like when you're preaching your message or just, in general, educating about these other religions? And I mean, because basically your message is those other religions are wrong, that they need to repent from those religions. Like, what's the basic approach to that? Do you just do you hit it in a very public, where you just stand up and you say this God is wrong and this God is wrong, or do you how do you move into addressing,
sure,
the false religions that are there?
Well, I tell you, people are able to recognize the truth when they feel it and see it and sense it. They've tried, most of them, been in those religions all their life, and look where it's gotten them so far. And so when you come and you emphasize the truth, and the truth transcends a lot of different issues, and share the good news, and not a controversial gospel necessarily, but share the good news, they are open to be, set free from thoughts of bondage or fear. Most all African religions and many world religions all have a more of a fear-based foundation to it. You have to appease your gods so that bad things don't happen to you. You have to earn this. You have to pay for this blessing, pay for this curse, or pay for this thing. And your ancestors or the spirits are mad at you, which is a lie from the pit of hell.
Sure.
And it keeps people down in control.
So will you use that kind of language, that we shouldn't have to appease gods, and that kind of thing?
At times, yes, but we emphasize on the good news. There's a loving God who loves you for who you are, and you don't have to appease him. He died for your sins, and he wants better things for you. And as you open that door with the good news, I tell you, the truth inside of the hearts and their eyes gravitates towards truth. Hmm. And they come and they want to hear more, and they want to get prayed for, and they're willing to listen and to follow you. And you get them in the door, and then obviously that's where the follow-up and discipleship happens. Get them to come to the church. And I tell you, miracles are a big eye-opener as well. When you have a person in the community that's been lame for the last 10, 12 years, and miraculously God heals them, that sends a sign that, hey, something is true here, something is real here, and wow, I mean, I knew this guy, and now he was sick, and now he's not, and something's happening here.
Yeah, so much of the New Testament gospel and even the ministry of Christ was his authority rested on the miracles that he did and the signs that he did, and so much of the response of the people, in Israel at the time were certainly grounded in those things. I'm very interested, is it often that you end up running into a pastor? Like how would you handle a pastor who happens to be going to a witch doctor to bless his crops and have a couple wives? Like do you continue to work with them, or is there a point at which you have to look them in the eye and say, you're either in or out?
There's definitely a point of accountability when you get there, but it's generally a good amount of time. It's just like a child. You don't expect them to learn and grow and know everything as an adult right away. They grow into it. And it's the same a little bit with their Christianity and their maturity in the Lord. They grow into those things. And as you see a heart that's diligent to learn, you're always going to work with them. Now, if they're not willing to learn and to follow and just go back and forth and just come when they want some good stuff and really not apply it, then there's a point of where you can get a little more stern with them and say, buck up or buck out kind of thing. And
sure.
Now's the time for that.
Hmm.
What is the predominant Christian flavor for those that are already Christians? I'm thinking that it might be Anglican because of the strong British presence down there for so long. Is that kind of where their theological, where they're more Orthodox, where they're more on the money? Are they leaning more in an Anglican tradition, or have there been a lot of non-denominational or other Protestant or maybe Roman Catholic missionaries down there or something that it's kind of fractured like the American landscape where there's so many different kinds of Christianity? Is it fairly fractured?
There is a very strong Dutch Reformed church especially amongst the white communities throughout South Africa. The non-denominational independent churches have been very strong the last 20-25 years, and so those would be two of the top ones there. But most denominations are still there as well.
In fact, wasn't Desmond Tutu, wasn't he Anglican? I think he was. I think he was a large part of...
Anglican, more Catholic.
He's Catholic?
Yeah.
Okay. I was unsure.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
I was thinking of Anglican. Because I read an article recently that was dealing with...
that was dealing with just the
denominations that are in Africa and dealing with their orthodoxy and how they approach religion. And Desmond was one of those guys that really emphasized social justice and those kinds of issues. And so he and the Anglicans, from what I understand, haven't necessarily been as gospel oriented. And I'm wondering how much that's the case. Like, how much do you get like a social gospel, as opposed to in some of those denominational
churches?
Yeah,
there's a big thrust for social initiatives, throughout the government and some of the major religions, it's give back to the people and kind of help kind of thing. But it's not going
far enough. Which isn't necessarily wrong.
No, and it's actually one of the strongest strategies that the Muslims are using right now. Mm. South Africa currently has only a small, about 4 or 5% population of Muslim believers, but they are going after that nation extremely aggressive. Already, extreme Muslims hold about 50% of the government positions throughout South Africa.
So they're 4% of the population, but they hold 50% of the governmental positions.
They're passing laws favorable for Muslim initiatives.
For Sharia law.
And moves. They come in and they'll go to these smaller towns and build schools, and they'll share with the people, hey, we'll let your kids come to school for free. We'll feed them twice a day.
Do you ever get the sense that like everybody's trying to go in there and buy them off? Like you're coming in with
blankets
and food and all this, and they're coming in with blankets and food, and you're trying to build schools and orphanages, and they're trying to build schools and orphanages. You feel like it's almost like a race to see who can buy them off first?
You can call it that.
I mean, I hate to go so cynical on the whole thing, but
it comes down to the spirit and the motives of the thing.
Yeah.
Where Christianity has a sense of freedom and liberation. Where even in the Muslim communities, I'll feed you, but you have to learn my ways. But you have to pray this. But you have to buy from this vendor and this vendor. But this, and it becomes back into a oppressive type of relationship. You have to earn things. You have to do things. You have to perform.
I keep referring to this book on this show. I've read this book about Christianity around the world that in 10, 15 years, the average Christian is going to be Southern and more Eastern, like either African or South American or Asian. And that there's a major shift of things in that direction. And what the book argued was that the majority of those people are very, very conservative, even though they might have a mix, like Rich is referring to here, that they tend to be very conservative in their approach to God in general. And as a result, they tend to think more in terms of morality and traditional morality. The interesting thing is that, here in the West, everybody would claim that you're going in and forcing them, to believe in this false religion, not a false religion, but your religion. You're forcing them to accept this alien religion, and you're buying them off, with these things that you bring in, food or whatever it is. And why can't you just let them be themselves? How would you answer something like that? Because there's quite a few in the West that would say that in Europe and the United States. Keep your religion to yourself, kind of a thing.
Yeah, that's a big subject and a lot of complex kind of answers to it, or, you know, responses to it. But I tell you, you know, it comes back to one of the foundational things of is we're not buying people's hearts and souls. It's sharing the truth, and people recognize freedom. They recognize truth, and they recognize liberation. You know, they've been in all these bondages and relationships over so many centuries, and when they recognize truth, you feel it, you sense it.
Well, on that note, believe it or not, the half hour's done.
Yes.
Goes by so fast sometimes, doesn't it? Jonathan Schweitzer, senior pastor of Crossroads Valley Chapel, thank you. Rich Franzen, founder of Impact Africa, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
If you're agreeable, we'd like to have you on maybe one more time for next week's show.
Absolutely.
And we'll pick up on a couple of things that occurred to me as I was listening to you answer mine and Jonathan's questions. So we'll have some fun. A little teaser for you. I plan on talking a little bit about the occult next week's show. Thank you to Putman Plumbing and Heating, How Can We Make You Smile, for sponsoring the show. I'm Troy Skinner. Thanks for listening to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio 930 WFMD. God bless.